Blog Talk Radio.
As the legend goes, an old Cherokee was teaching his grandson about life. He said to the boy, "A fight is going on inside me. It is a terrible fight, and it is between two wolves. One is evil. He is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, guilt, lies, superiority, and ego. The other is good. He is joy, peace, love, hope, humility, kindness, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. The same fight is going on inside you, and inside every other person too." The grandson thought about it for a minute, and then he asked his grandfather, "Which wolf will win?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "The one you feed."
Good evening, everyone. My name is Bill Green, and I'll be your host or co-host for the next hour on tonight's podcast radio show, Healing with Sound, the Almost Lost Art of Meditation with Music and Color as well. My co-pilot, Will Green, may or may not make it tonight. I'm not sure. The show today, it was skeptical if it was even going to happen. Power outages, a storm came through. I know it knocked him out, his internet connection out. I don't know if he'll be able to call in or not. So you might just be stuck with me. The unfortunate part of being stuck with me is that I don't know how to give you the details about other ways to participate in this show. There's a way you can call Blog Talk Blog, B-L-O-G, Talk Radio, and it will take you right to the Greenhouse FX. And there you can use your credit card without being charged anything to gain access to our chat room. I have just opened the chat room. I don't see anybody in there yet. But that doesn't mean anything, because without Will, I'm usually flying kind of blind. You know, he's my EP or my executive producer. So in many ways, he handles these things that I still haven't figured out. Poor excuse, I know. I'm actually just typing in a hello to everybody now. So tonight, as we have done for the past five shows, we're going to be talking about a form of meditation called breathwork. Breathwork is not in itself a panacea. It is not the all and the everything. It's not designed to be that. Instead, breathwork is very pliable, meaning that it's designed to help augment or support any type of work you may be doing on yourself, whether it's going to counseling, whether it's involved in some other form of healing with meditation. I see my man Adam is in the chat room. All right. That means I must be doing okay. You know, I don't ever know if I've even made it to the air or not without Will. And I think I see his number here in the studio. By the way, which reminds me, if in fact there is a time, if you dial in and you want to make a comment, just hit one on your dial pad and it will indicate that you're in the studio wanting to make a comment. And if time permits, I'll bring you in. Hold on just a second. Let me see if I can bring my man in here. Area code 773. You are on the air. Uh-oh. I guess maybe not.
Hey, sorry about that.
He is. My man, I was just lamenting about the fact I wasn't sure if you were going to be able to join us tonight, you know, talking about the power outages in the area. So the show tonight is really just kind of thrown together, y'all, and we'll be winging it as a review of the past five shows. So I was telling everybody that you do a much better job than me in explaining the nuts and the bolts of Blog Talk Radio, the Greenhouse FX. So I'll just kind of relinquish control if you're all right with that and do your usual bit, man.
Okay. So beginning of each show, just we like to remind everybody, grab a pen and paper or a pencil and pad.
There you go. Right.
Post a note and marker. Want to make sure you got something to write with. At the beginning of every show, as Dad mentioned, when you call in, before we get to that, I'm not sure what information you already gave. So grab a
pen. Nothing.
There might be some information you might want to research. You have any questions, anything like that. We want to make sure that you don't miss anything. So hopefully you've got something to write with by now. There's a call-in number here if you want to call in directly, as he mentioned, about pressing 1 on the keypad. Our number here is 516-453-6094. Again, 516-453-6094. Press 1 on the keypad, and like Dad said, that'll put your number in the queue, and Dad will try to pull you in as soon as he can. Another way that you can engage, pretty much what we like about Blog Talk Radio, is allows us to engage with you all, the listeners, and vice versa. So you have the phone number to call in, or if you like, you can listen online like Cousin Adam is doing. Doing that online in the chat room, you can engage it through the website, blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhouseeffect.fx. And what you do is set up your free Blog Talk Radio profile. It will ask you for a credit card number. You won't be charged. Just basic formalities to set up the profile. With the free account profile, you can access the chat room at the bottom of the live broadcast. Or I believe that haven't had a chance to check. I'm assuming that Dad had set up a Facebook event page. Did you set one up? Okay.
Yes.
So you can also access the Facebook event page if you received an invitation. Or if not, you can always go directly to his personal page. I'm sure he's got it posted up there. And if you did receive an invitation and you're listening to the show, be sure to reach out to him or myself. And, you know, just let us know that you're interested in receiving information on further shows. You can also get that information by setting up a Blog Talk Radio account as well. You will automatically receive emails each time the show is set up for broadcast automatically. I don't think I've ever mentioned that before. But, yeah, you can do that as well. Post any questions or comments. There you have it.
All right. Very good. That's why I like him to do it, John. You heard firsthand, you know, even though he wasn't expecting me to throw him to the lions like that, you know, he's always quick on his feet and able to respond, you know. Yeah. So how you doing, man? How's the weather down your way treating you? I was telling everyone some power outages in the area. Yeah.
Yeah, the storm, you know, as you know, has moved pretty quickly through the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Right.
So, so the sun is out again, and the temperature is going to pick back up. It was nice for a moment, for a brief moment. But, we'll be heading back up to the 90s in just a moment, if not already back there by now. So, you know, it's just getting used to this new weather here, you know, this is our first digit time here in Texas, so just getting kind of used to it, so, you know, it's kind of wearing me out. You can probably hear it in my voice, so we're just making do the best we can, you know.
Yeah, you sound fine. Absolutely. Yeah, and, that's right, this is your first full cycle of seasons going through Texas summer. You know, there's a saying, there's an old saying about that. It's, in Texas, we have two seasons. There's January, then there's summer. And I haven't found anything to dissuade me from that idea in the 9 years. My second go-round, the first time I was down here 3 years, and now we've been here 9. It's hard to believe. And the first go-round, I was in Austin, which is, you know, hotter and more humid than up in the Dallas area. Although these past few weeks, well, it's been rough, and I want to I want to give mention to the fact of you and your brothers coming to my aid, saving my life, you know, bringing me that window unit for my bedroom. You know, I think I mentioned last Wednesday that the air had been out, y'all. It had been out for almost 2 weeks up here in the upstairs part of the area where
right.
I reside.
Yeah,
so
the last,
definitely.
The last two shows, yeah. The last two
yeah,
shows.
Yeah, so, yeah, check that out, yeah. So I'm telling you, y'all, you know, I mean, like, I know people say that, you know, we're a culture or we're a country that, you know, is spoiled, that, you know, we the richest country in the world and we have things that other people would die for and we take things for granted. Well, the problem is when you're born in a country like this, these aren't things that we necessarily see as taken for granted. These are things we grow up with and there's expectations tied to it. Because there's things we grow up with. I'm old enough where I remember when we didn't have air conditioning. You know, I'm old enough when many of the luxuries that people enjoy today were the result of inventions. You know, and it's hard to believe sometimes in my lifetime that I remember when television first came to be a reality, you know, in people's homes. And up until the 1960s, if you had a TV, it was just one. After 1962, there was an explosion of TVs where people average two in a household. I remember when, you know, I always joke about it, saying things that would test a person's age, like I'll motion my hand, like twisting a handle. And they'll say, what is that? I said, that's rolling the windows down in the car. And I said, what the hell are you talking about? Nobody roll windows down in the car. You know, or I remember driving from point A to point B all around this country without a cell phone. We depended on public phones and truck drivers. And never once were really concerned about our safety on the road, how that has changed. And, you know, saying all that also, you know, brings me to another part of, before I start, you know, drifting too far away from the theme of the show, you know, I thought maybe this is as good a time as any to share somewhat with you, the listeners, my experience, my personal experience with breath work as it came to be a reality in my life. And what I mean by reality is that it's my life. It's not just what I do, it's what I, well, ha-ha, it's what I breathe. Yeah, poor attempt at a pun, right? All right. I just celebrated my 42nd year of sobriety on Monday, but it's kind of it's conflictual, it's a conflict of dates, you know, because on the 18th of June was when I was trying to get into detox, but I got there too late. So on the 19th, and that night of the 18th, I wound up at Will, at your house, and using your mom's phone to call my cousin, who picked me up asking if I could spend the night at his house because I didn't want to go back to my apartment. It's just full of too many shadows and too many nightmares. And, of course, you know, well, I'm saying, of course, you all don't know the story, but he picked me up without hesitation, allowed me to spend the night at his crib. And I asked if he would take me to detox the next day, which would have been the 19th. And his wife, Sandy, sat up with me all night, listening to me lament, regret, boo-hoo, and Art went to bed. Yeah. If you know my cousin, you know, he's like, yeah, hold that point. We'll talk about it in the morning. But he was up bright and early the next day. That would be the 19th. And so early, in fact, that when we left and got to detox, they hadn't even opened. They had not even opened their doors yet. But I was admitted and spent that first night in detox. And so I considered the 20th to be my official first day. But I guess there's like 3 days of my first day of my new life. And all three kind of worked together. But since then, since June 20th, 1981, I have remained free of alcohol and other controlled substances. I know, like, marijuana is now legal, and I'm glad it's just now legal. Well, it wouldn't have made any difference. It didn't stop us from getting high. I experimented with other dry drugs. I never tried the spike, the needle, because needles scared the hell out of me, and it would have just blown my high to use it. And I remember that first night I spent in detox. I was awakened by a blood-curdling scream, but I wasn't sure if it was me screaming, if I had a nightmare or what. But later that morning when I did wake up, a couple bunks over from me, was rolled up. The bed was rolled up, and there was a guy who they told me later had whatever he went through, he had screamed in the middle of the night, and he booked. He was like, I guess he decided, no, man, I ain't ready for this, whatever this is. So from detox, I went to a rehab with in the North Chicago VA, and after 36 days of being in rehab, I was selected to take up residence in a halfway house in Waukegan, Illinois, called Bridge House. And I lived there as a resident for 9 months, and then I was put in a counseling trainee program. And since then, you know, that's the path I have followed. And I'll never forget laying in my bed the last night of my time in rehab. I prayed to the Lord and asked, you know, what am I going to do? I don't want to go back to Chicago. I never knew Chicago sober. But I had no resources. I had nothing, nothing at all except the clothes on my back. And I heard this voice clear as a bell say to me that I would become a counselor. And as long as I stay true to that path, I may not get everything I want, but I would always get what I need. And 42 years later, you know, much to my chagrin, because sometimes I confuse wants and needs, as I'm sure a couple of y'all out there do as well. You know, the Lord has never turned his back on me. There was a saying that my ex-wife, one of my ex-wives, let me put it that way, her pastor of the church said, his God is seldom early but never late. And I never forgot that. And there were many times that got me through some rough times. And I had the chance of going back to the church and kicking it with him for a couple minutes. And I told him, you know, Pastor, you know, that thing you said from the pulpit just helped me so many times. And he said, what was that? I said, when you said my God is seldom early and never late. And it was this pause in our conversation. And then he just looked at me and said, I don't remember saying that. But you know, the thing is, what we both celebrated was the fact that I remembered. And in reminding him, you know, he knew right then and there that sometimes, as it is with so many of us, the Lord speaks through us, you know, to others of us. And that in itself, you know, was, I should have made a T-shirt about that. That has been a saving grace. So after 3 years of uninterrupted sobriety, they had its own issues, you know, job changes. Divorce was finalized while I was going through living at the halfway house. My girlfriend, who I had been living with, told me she liked me better than drunk, and I needed to choose between the halfway house and coming back to her place. And I chose the halfway house, which was the scariest thing I ever did, because I don't remember, or I would have a hard time giving anyone an account for the time that I lived where I didn't depend on females to meet my emotional needs. So it was scary, but it was supported, and I survived. And then after, you know, after returning to Chicago, working at a halfway house of black men, I myself was in conflict. I knew there had to be more to my life than just living alcohol free, or as they would put it in the program, you know, being a grateful recovering alcoholic. I was that. But and whenever I raised questions about what my life's purpose is, you know, my struggles with identity, my cultural conflicts, I was always hit with the same thing. You know, those things don't mean anything. Just be a grateful recovering alcoholic. Well, those things meant a lot to me. I needed to have a sense of attachment, of belonging, of cultural recognition. As a black male growing up as a Roman Catholic, I was conflicted with just who I was. So without turning this into that story, I was crying on my mentor's shoulder about my struggles with identity and what this gift of sobriety was supposed to bring. This is after 3 years of recovery. And she told me about this workshop, and she told me about this person who would be leading the workshop that was also a guest presenter at one of the state alcoholism conferences. And I had, because my mentor was a person who worked for the state and arranged these type of workshops, I had the opportunity to meet the person who would be later a future mentor of mine who was putting on this workshop, 5-day event called Breathwork. And I probably would not have, no, not probably, I would not have gone. you know, even though my mentor was sick of hearing me crying, blah, blah, blah. It just sounded a little bit too woo-woo to me. It sounded a little bit too spooky. Black folks by nature are kind of superstitious anyway. And the idea of doing something that may have been an affront to God, because I couldn't find breathwork in scripture anywhere, I thought maybe that's just a little bit too witchy, you know, a little bit too mystical, a little bit too putting something ahead of God in my life. But she told me she was going to be there. And so that was what I needed to hear. And I trusted her with my soul, so to say. So going to the workshop, it was in Woodstock, Illinois. And I don't know if you've ever had the experience of meeting somebody for the first time, but in meeting them, you just know you've known them all your life. And that's how it was when I met the facilitator of this event. Name is Jacqueline Small. And at the time, she had a program. It was an institute. It was called Eusakia Institute, and she offered spiritual retreats all over the country. And I was fortunate enough to have met her to experience that five-day event, and I knew right then and there. I didn't know how, but I was determined to find some way to bring the concepts of music to recovery. And over a course of about 12 years, I wound up working for her. And I wound up being what's called the roadie, and that's where I was responsible for trucking the sound equipment from one retreat center to the next. And I probably logged close to maybe 500,000 miles over the course of the time that I worked for Eusakia, which was about almost 20 years. And I had an opportunity in driving through this country and Canada to see some of the things that you can't see from the air. And some of it was, you know, breathtaking. Some of it took my breath away, and some of it was damn scary. There's a story I tell about being stopped in this little town in Georgia called Ulijay. And rather than get into the nuts and the bolts of the story, I was pulled over, and I got prayerful. And I knew enough to, even though it was the daytime, I still turned on the interior light, put my hands on the steering wheel, and watched this guy climb. And at that time, it was recommended to turn off the engine. Now they say keep it running. But I turned off the engine, rolled my window down, and I watched this dude, you know, this humongous piece of flesh climb out of this patrol car. And as he was walking up to my car, he put his hand on his pistol. On the holster, and he eased up next to me and leaned down, and the first words out of his mouth was, "It's you. I am so sorry. My dispatcher must have made a mistake. You are free to go." And just like that, he turned around, climbed back in his patrol car, and drove away. I sat for a minute, and only for a short minute. And I thought, you know, get the hell out of here, and I started driving. And I must have gone 10 yards, and I damn near just slammed on the brakes because everything just hit me at once. And one of the questions I had was, what did he see when he leaned down into that ride? You know, he didn't ask for license. He didn't ask for registration. He just said he made a mistake. Oh, it's you. I'm sorry. You're free to go. And I was heading to a retreat at that time in Dahlonega, Georgia. And by then, of course, I was on staff, and I was sharing the story, and everybody had their own answers for it. Like one suggestion was that, you know, he pulled me over because I was mistaken as a drug runner. Another was because I was black and male driving through a little town of ELJ, and that's not a place where black people drive through. And, you know, and people all had, but nobody could answer the question of what did he see when he looked in and said, "Oh, it's you," and why did he just let me go? So that was so often my intro to what really sealed the deal for me as far as believing in the concepts of inner work and realizing that more so than anything else, and I truly believe this, entering into the realm of the mystical, taking on the themes of meditation in a way that you are not in control, yet in control, meaning that I'm not talking about physical meditation, you know, like people running, exercising, or whatever the case may be. I'm talking about where you're laying still, and there's nothing going on but you and your heartbeat, you know, and breathing the full breath in with the good, out with the bad, and letting the breath oxygenate the blood in such a way that it creates this altered sense of consciousness in the brain. And that's what happens when you oxygenate the blood, you know, that the brain itself becomes relatively altered. And having had that experience was kind of like the keynote. It was what was called the cornerstone of my absolute commitment to what the Lord said to me as long as I stay true to my path. It became clear to me that that was my path. But it didn't mean that it was all, you know, glory trail grins and smiles. You know, like I said, I went through a lot of issues, and issues that all of us have gone through, no question about it. You know, broken relationships that didn't mend. In other words, when I broke up with Will's mother, we didn't get back together as husband and wife, but we did get back together as family. And I always, every chance I get, lament as much as I can, or say rather, in glowing terms of how she never anytime sabotaged the idea of me getting back together with my son. I've had people die. Yeah, I wasn't a year in recovery, and my brother Jeff died. Jeff was only 39 years old, and there was nothing I could do to say anything about my own experience in recovery. So, you know, Jeff had his own struggles, but what took him out was a brain hemorrhage, as a result of falling down at his first day on the job, hit his head. I've had situations where I had to file Chapter 13, I had to file Chapter 7, and I went through a second divorce, wound up picking up stakes and moving to Austin, and taking a job. Actually, my title was the Director of Transformation. That's what the executive director decided. That's what the executive director decided would be my title. So I was the Director of Transformation. I didn't put that on my cards that I had made. I just put it Director of Meditation. I felt like that other one was a little bit too puffy. But I thought that was my dream job. I mean, he courted me and wanted me to create, and this is, you know, what I was saying earlier, that I really wanted to bring breathwork to treatment. He wanted me to design a model of breathwork for all of his programs, and he had about five of them. And I just knew I had arrived. But after just a couple years, I realized my dream turned into a nightmare. And again, you know, I was clueless as to what exactly my purpose was to be. I went back to Chicago, took a job with the, for a while I was a Fed, as you were, Will, you know, taking that job. It was called ATR, Access to Recovery. It was something that then President Bush, George W., came up with Access to Recovery. Had to do with faith-based initiatives because treatment programs were just overcrowded. So the idea was to create funding for churches in communities of need. And I became a coordinator of that. And for ethical reasons, I resigned. But not just resigned for ethical reasons. I had it in my head that I was going to become this well-known writer. Not just a writer, but a well-known one, and that it was going to pay for the rest of my life. Well, that went belly up as well. And through a series of events, you know, I'm here now in Dallas, you know, living with family and, you know, getting by on Social Security. But the thing is, the point I want to stress is that all of my life endeavors, all of the struggles, all of the confusions, all of the hurts and the pains, all of the victories, you know, whatever the case may be, so much of it, if not all of it, was in some way or another supported or augmented or otherwise heightened by my continued investment in doing this thing called integrative breathwork. So understand, I'm not saying it's the all and the everything, and I realize some people, you know, are scared to death about having to relinquish control of our own direction in life, feeling that our own devices that we use are good enough. And I'm not one to argue about that. What I would like to state, though, if there's a time, if there's been a time, if there is a time right now that you yourself are struggling with, you know, familiar themes of life, themes that seem to constantly reappear, although maybe disguised as something new, but still with a old flair to it. My only question would be, what are you doing different to address it? More so than not, most of us who venture into the realm of counseling are willing to turn our lives and our care over to the direction of strangers, people who don't know us from Dick's Hat Band, and not knowing them either. And somehow the idea is that whatever I as a client express to you as a counselor or a therapist or a psychiatrist, that everything that comes out of my mouth is fact. Well, I don't know about y'all, but especially early in my stages of recovery, most of what came out of my mouth was a lie. Well, maybe not so much a lie, but an incomplete. You know, it's like I was only willing to give so much of myself up to someone who I had no idea what they were writing on paper about. You know, all I knew was I knew enough to know that whatever they're writing down is the fact, you know, of whatever they surmise is my issues. So if I'm dealing in areas of excuse the term, bullshit, then naturally all they can do is write down their assessment of my bullshit. So early in my recovery, it was full of bullshit, but it was for protection. And that's the unique thing that I hope, if nothing else, those of you who have continued to have interest in this program, that you keep with you. You know, our egos are designed for our self-protection. That's the voice you hear that says, no, you don't want to do this. No, you don't want to do that. No, instead do this, instead do that. Our egos control our decisions, but our issues are born from conflict, inner conflict. Our bodies are nothing but storehouses. It storehouses episodes of pain, although the brain does not have the capacity to store memories of pain itself. It just knows that a certain event hurt, like I broke my nose a couple of times. I had hip surgery, blah, blah, blah. I can't do anything to bring that pain back. All I can do is bring back the memory of the fact that, oh, yeah, that did hurt, but not the actual hurt itself. So, again, stressing the point that the body being a storehouse of pain is not all in just one area. We feel different things in different areas of our body. And I think you all would agree with that. Some things we feel in our heads, you know, in our thoughts. Some things we feel in our hearts, especially the painful events emotionally. Some issues we feel in our gut, especially the knots. I don't mean the K-N-O-T-S. I mean the N-O-T-S. There are things that I'm just not going to do. And some things we feel in our ass. Some things are just a pain in the ass, plain and simple. So the first, of course, line of defense of our ego is protect us. But what we have to remember is that our decisions are solely based on how healthy our egos are. A healthy ego makes healthy decisions. An unhealthy ego makes unhealthy decisions. So sometimes we can be dissuaded by an ego that at one point made a healthy choice about, let's say, something like, for me, you know, it's time that you start trusting other people, Jack. It's time that maybe you start sharing, you know, going to somebody who's a professional and see if they can help you, which is what I did. I went to a professional, but I didn't go because I was destitute or desperate. I went because my girlfriend said, you either go to that counselor or you're out. Well, I didn't have nowhere to go, so I went to the therapist, you know. But as unhealthy as my ego was, it made a healthy decision, even though the reason for doing it was somewhat flawed, yeah, and not 100% pure. It was to, I guess you could say, create a temporary cure for a future problem. In other words, not knowing what's ahead of me. Let me do this now. Let me put a Band-Aid on it. At least that'll shut her up. You know, but as it turned out, it was the best thing I could have done because he made an appointment that eventually I used that got me in the detox when I hit bottom. And bottom, best way I can describe it, is being afraid to die from what you're doing but not wanting to live another day of death from what you're doing. That's the best way I can describe bottom. you know, not wanting to die as a result of what you're doing, but not wanting to live another day of that death of how what you're doing, how it is what you're doing. So breathwork came to me 3 years after uninterrupted sobriety. The first one I did absolutely scared the bejesus out of me in witnessing first someone having, you know, as done in pairs, being the sitter for the person breathing, and that just means you protect their space, and then actually having to lay down the next day and breathe myself. Now, it wasn't so much the person I was sitting with. Amy Bunce, I'll never forget her name, an older white woman, cool as cool could be. You know, if there would be an image of someone who would be like a mystical teacher that would come to you in a dream, it would look like Amy Bunce. And she gave me this little book, you know, and I loaned that book out to someone and never got it back. And I asked the person about it, and they swore they sent it to me. And doggone it, I was trying to stall and talking about it long enough for the name of the book to come to me, but I don't remember. And I remember as soon as we're done with tonight's show. And all of this is sequential, y'all. You know, so it's not just me talking in random about unattached or unassociated events. Now, these were all, I guess you could say, coordinated, you know, by my God, you know, to bring me along step by step and understanding the dynamics of healing and the issues of change. So when I laid down to do my experience, I was afraid because of who I had witnessed next to Amy, and he was like, he caterwauled for the whole 2 hours that this music was playing, screaming and hollering, thrashing about, and it carried on into that night. Now, I had never seen anything like this before. Even church didn't prepare me for this. And, you know, I guess if there had been a movie that maybe would have, it would have had to be The Exorcist. But The Exorcist, you know, wasn't a movie that had come out yet. So I'm watching this dude going through, you know, being exercised, I guess. And it was, my roommate was kind of like a mystic in his own right. So he was helping the facilitator in helping this guy just calm down all through the night. And I witnessed at one point his just screaming. And I had to get back to my cabin, and the sun had set. And I'm not one who wanders in the forest at night. Now, I can go through almost any community in the hood, but the forest, you know, them, that's where them creatures reside that hang out in my imagination, like Wolfman. And all them imaginary. I ain't too much concerned about Frankenstein and the mummy. I know I could outrun them. But you ain't going to outrun the Wolfman. You know, so the idea of going back to my cabin, but I made my way over there. But when my roommate returned, I asked him how the guy was doing, and I heard him say, "She's fine now." So to me, that meant whatever he was going through jumped out of him and jumped into his wife, because she was there helping them, you know, calm the guy down. And that's what got me spooked. So it came out of him, jumped in her, and she was going to be laying down the breeze at the same time I was. So this is what, you know, what I had to deal with the next day, and laid down. And as soon as I started breathing, as the relaxation talk was given, I calmed down enough to get into my breath, full cyclic, uninterrupted breathing. You know, six breaths in, six breaths out. You know, and just kept doing that. And I really didn't think anything was happening. But I noticed that my arms were starting to extend itself, and they started going up and down like I was a dove flying. And I thought, well, this is interesting. And then they suddenly cramped up. Now we know that's called tetany. And I mean cramped up to the point to where it was starting to hurt, you know, which is something that happens sometimes with new breathers. Not everybody, but, you know, some. And I'm sorry it doesn't happen to me anymore, because that would always let me know that I was really altered. But as my hands began to gradually loosen, I saw this amazing thing in my third eye, you know, right in my, you know, imagination. Like if you close your eyes right now and you look into the density of that darkness, I started seeing this image of a glowing yellow light, but it was surrounding a black hole. It was looking like the earth in eclipse, or the sun in eclipse. And then there was something that shot out from the top of it, like maybe a comet, and it just started coming at me. And as it got closer and closer, it got bigger and bigger. And then it hit me, you know, I mean, it didn't hit me, hurt me, just kind of, you know, just exploded in light. And when that happened, I heard something happen in my chest. It felt like my chest had just cracked. It was a heart opening. And my heart opening released this volume of tears that I had not experienced in the 3 years of recovery. I did not cry the whole time of the first 3 years, which included my brother Jeff's death and funeral. And it's just tears would kind of get to the edge, maybe in whatever instances, but there was never any tear release for 3 years. And I just wrote it off as, well, you know, this is just one of the trade-offs. I was going to live a life of sobriety, and I just wouldn't be able to cry about it. Well, this thing cracked me open, and tears just started. I mean, the tears started not just flowing out, but they started gushing out my nose. I started blowing snot bubbles, and people were handing me Kleenex, and I just wanted this stuff to just flow, just come on out of me, just, you know, let me have it. And it just, you know, it transformed me. But I thought moments like that only happen once, and after that, then you stay in that state for the rest of your life. So I thought I was enlightened. I felt enlightened. I just knew God like I had never known God. And when we were leaving the workshop, I thought this was going to be me. I was just going to just be walking on air. I was just going to, and just when I was pulling out the parking lot, car shot by me. And I said, "You mother of me, man." And I started cussing. And I thought, oh, damn. I started crying because I thought I blew my only chance for enlightenment. I thought that was it. I had it, then I lost it. And it wasn't until 3 years later came to realize, no, man, this is something that you keep doing till you get it right. And so it's actually 4 years. I returned to another breath work, and the same person, the same facilitator, was offering it, and it was in Eagles Ridge, Eagles Nest, by Galena in Illinois. Again, had an incredible experience, you know, a release of tears. One of the co-facilitators told me I needed to breathe more, which made me cry more. And by then I had gotten married again to the second wife, and the one that, you know, recently, not recently, but the latest divorce. I've been only married twice. But it was in 87 that I had the opportunity to go to a 7-day workshop, and that was my first experience in Dahlonega, Georgia. I only remember the first day and the last day. If not for the mandalas that I drew during the course, and I had, I think, 4 or 6 of them, if not for those mandalas, I would not be able to show proof of the fact that I was there for those 7 days. It was the most amazing, and I drove from, it was my first, you know, road trip that far. Driving up that mountain was one experience, but driving down the mountain, hitting home, was quite another one. But again, I'm not going to, Will gave me the story of the book whenever I decide to put it in book form of my experiences for the 20 years and plus of driving as a roadie for USACIA. And I was telling Will this story as we were heading to Connecticut, driving to Connecticut for my, it was Art's deaconship, wasn't it, Will, or was it something else? Was it Jeff's wedding? Maybe it was Jeff's wedding.
I'm not 100%. I think that might have been it, but, you know, because...
Well, it was me, you, and Art. Yeah, it was me, you,
it was
and Armand.
Me, you, and Armand, and we drove up together,
right.
And then I jumped on the plane and left. I was just there real quick. But if
right.
That's what you remember, if that's what it was, I'll go with you on it.
I think it was for Jeff's wedding. But it doesn't matter.
No.
My point is, while we were driving there, Armand was asleep in the back of the ride, and you and I were talking, and I was sharing with you this experience. And you said, man, it sounds like you're a road shaman. And I thought, man, that's the title. Just like that, it came to me. So eventually I'm going to put it, I have it written. It's done. I just need to redo it. I sent that, but that was what was supposed to be my beginning of this career as a writer, and I sent it to the Chicken Soup of the Soul people. A week later, it came back rejected, and I sent them a nasty letter. You know, y'all got to be sorry. But I realized then that, you know, like it's not a given, even though the guy who suggested I send this manuscript to the Chicken Soup people, because he had a book, couple books published by them, and told me the person to send it to. Just because you know somebody doesn't always mean they're going to accept you. So you know, after the rejection, the book has just sat since. So it's done. It just needs to be polished now. After publishing three other books, I know now what this one needs, and it just needs some tooling, just some, you know, some a little bit of this and a little bit of that. But it's Road Shaman, and it tells the story of my time with the Institute and driving around this country. You know, and then, you know, some of it was kind of scary, some of it was enlightening, but it was all a part of my life. But none of that means much of anything if I never learned the lesson of ego. You know, all of life's conflicts are born from the ego. So hopefully y'all took enough notes now where you know when I talk about chakras, it comes to you right away that you know that it deals with the lower three chakras, the first, second, and third, the root chakra, the I think I called it sacral chakra, and well, rather than try to remember the names of them, isn't that a shame? I don't remember right now what I called them. First, second, and third is how I think of them. Color is associated to the first chakra, it's the spine, and it's red, the base of the spine. The second chakra is, you know, the sexual center, and its color is orange. So beware of that orange y'all wear. And you can think of the first chakra as being chaotic, the second as being passionate, and the third chakra is really the hero's journey, and that color is yellow. And the idea is finding and understanding through those three chakras where your life events first take place. This is where the ego is called, you know, to service. This is where it's going to show itself as it best can in regards to what it doesn't want you to do. And almost always what it doesn't want you to do is what you need to do, because the ego wants to always be in control. Does that sound familiar to any of you know, want to always be able to be in control of your life no matter how screwed up it might be? The idea being that you know what's best for you no matter where your decisions lead you. And I'm saying you, but I just as easily should be saying me, but I'm saying you just to put a personal spin on it. Just something to consider. So the chaotic aspect, the passionate aspect, and then the hero's aspect, you know, third chakra, you know, but again, recognize that that third chakra is the last stronghold, you know, of the ego. That's the will to know. You know, the first chakra is the will to survive. The second is the will to feel. And the third is the will. Now, not W-H-E-E-L, W-I-L-L. The stronghold of the ego is the will to survive, the will to feel, and the will to know. And that third chakra is a booger, you know, because that's the one where so many people get, I won't say trapped, but I will use the word disillusion. There's an intellectual enlightenment that happens where people become somebody else instead of who they are, and that somebody else is better serving than who they are, like a person who might live behind the initials of their name, Dr. Bill Green or Bill Green, you know, MS or whatever the case may be, you know, whatever, you know, that title may be, pastor maybe, you know, but people who, you know, live by the title, and that's how people know them and know nothing about how things are in their real life. Well, that intellectual enlightenment is very seductive, and it's also very, very addicting. And many who fall into a trap of intellectual enlightenment have the feeling of arriving, but that's because they know the things that they talk about, but they just haven't, they know the path, they just haven't walked the path. You know, it's what, you know, it's a big difference between talking the path and walking the path. So talking your walk and walking your walk are two very different things. And that third area is the area required to arrive to that will to know. And letting go of that will to know is what thrusts a person into that fourth chakra, which is the heart. And that's where all things begin to collapse, all issues surrounding fear, surrounding uncontrolled passion, and an unwillingness to relinquish the controls of my own devices, they all kind of collapse in the heart. You know, the heart is the junction box. It's where the conflict from the lower elements of self meet the harmony of the higher aspects of self. And the fifth, sixth, and seventh chakra, pure spirit. There is no ego in spirit. That's the difference. So what we seek is harmony through conflict, and it merges at the heart. So going to this 7-day workshop was my first real deepening into the understanding of what it means to come face to face to the shadowy aspects of my ego. Now, shadow is something that can best be served in its own show. I think I said last week we were going to talk about it more in depth this week, but I think I need to hold off on that and just continue to talk more about the intricacies of meditation, especially meditation to music, and the aspects that come from the type of workshops that I've been to and the kind that I offer. It has to do with the music, it has to do with the breathing, and it has to do with group processing, and it has to do with artwork. And I just cannot stress the value of artwork, what we call mandalas. A mandala is a Sanskrit word for circle. Now, of course, the advantage of circle is that it has no beginning and no end. So there's no head, there's no head and there's no toe. You know, it's a continuum. And when a mandala is drawn from altered state consciousness event like breathwork, then whatever is put on that paper becomes a snapshot from the soul. The soul speaks to us in symbols, doesn't speak to us in everyday language. Everyday language is confined to whatever part of the world one inhabits. And even if you're a master of several languages, there's still the first language that is the root language of your own expression. And no one can speak as clearly feeling-wise from any other language like they can from their original language. You know, you ever wonder how a baby decides what language to speak? And that's kind of trippy when you think about it. You know, but that language assigned to them, regardless of whatever culture they're born into, becomes the real testimony of what maybe you could say the Gospel of John speaks of at the beginning when it says, first was the Word. You know, we're known by our word. You know, our word is what separates us from anybody else's word. You know, and that's what we're held by. We're held by that vibration that only comes from our throat. You know, that's how whatever you call your creator just differentiates your expressions of need from anybody else's. You know, no matter how much you duplicate, it comes from the vibration of your throat, not somebody else's. And it stands to reason that the fifth chakra would be the first one a person hits when they come through the heart. You know, it's the love of truth. Yeah, I almost said something else. Now, the love of truth is not truth versus lie. It's the love of truth. And everybody who's listening to me right now, you know your truth. You know it whether you're speaking it or not. You know it whether you're owning it or not. And you know it whether you hear it, you know, as soon as you hear it. You know your truth when you hear it. You may not admit it. You know your truth, you know, even if you're not speaking it, you know. And you know your truth when you are, you know, and that's how it should be. You know, your truth is the only word you're held by. So that truth, even though it may come out as a lie, is still your truth. It's just come out in a distorted way. And that's, you know, how you separate truth from lie. But they have to work hand in hand. You can't have any flaw. There's a clarity of purpose. So whatever I see as a defect, I have to have as complement. You know, one can't live without the other, light and dark. One can't live without the other. If it's all dark, it's all dark. If it's all light, it's all light. But we don't live that way. There is darkness and there is light. There is darkness and there is light. There is truth and there is lie. There is fabrication and there is authentication. But we know this. We know this within ourselves. And the idea is to accept it, to own it, and to strive for it. Not perfecting it, but improving it. You know, we strive for improvement, not perfection. You know, why? Because we failed at perfection shortly after we were born. Maybe it took a year or two, but it was something we did contrary to what we intended to do. So much for me. It's like bowling. Everybody wants to bowl 300. But if you've ever bowled before, the first time you throw that ball, if you don't hit a strike, then so much for always being perfect. So you might as well just realize, oh, I got two shots at getting, knocking down 10 pins, not just one. Yeah. So every day we wake up, we get another shot at the title. We get another chance to throw a strike. You know, every day we wake up and it's just a matter of resetting the pins and just hitting them lanes and trying one more time. Whereas my coach would tell me, you know, keep doing it till you do it right. So entering into the realm of breath work has helped me work my way through, you know, just a plethora of issues. Not, you know, not fix them, but help me work through them. Help me work through them in the times of great confusion. But again, breath work being pliable and not being a panacea requires other work being done too. So like, let's say, you know, I went through a relationship that broke my heart. Okay, I need to do the things of heart repair and then use breath work as the guide of the repair that needs to be done. Lets me know where I am through the course of action as I contact and as I familiarize myself with the flow of energy through my body. Where is it flowing? Where am I stuck? And then a lot of times I can differentiate between what is really something that the ego is wanting and maybe something my spirit is telling me. You know, our egos always have to die to a spiritual enlightenment. There's no way of getting around that. And whether you know it or not, or whether you like it or not, y'all, I need to be a better bearer of bad tidings. You have gone through many ego deaths to arrive to wherever you are right now. That's the good news and the bad news. The bad news is as you've gone through it, the good news is that you survived it just to go through another one eventually. You know, and that's keep doing it to get it right. So if there's stuff going on in your life right now, all that stuff is just wanting to find some point of expression, clarity, and clearing. You know, so give it expression first that it's going on. Seek, you know, the clarity of what is recognized needs to happen, and then have that, man, just have that moment of freedom to know that it's one that you let go. But keep in mind, caution, old behaviors die hard and never without a struggle. All righty. So I can see by the clock, we're about out of time. Will, how you doing there, man? You good?
Yeah.
Comments, yeah. Thoughts, questions, complaints?
I appreciated listening to this show. A couple things here, you know, ladies and gentlemen, you know, Dad always emphasizes a lot about writing your own story, being able to tell your story. This was a great example of that tonight. If anything, this should have been the first episode, but I'm glad where it is. You know, I enjoy hearing these stories. You know, I don't get tired of them, believe it or not. That's good to hear. Well, that, you know, but yeah, that's another conversation for another time. But no, I did enjoy it.
Amen.
But number two, for those that are listening, you know, breath work. Well, let me say this, and I'm a be professional. Bill Green offers breath work not only for individuals but for group workshops. So for those of you that are listening, for those of you that work in group settings, you know, trying to think of morale boosters or whatever the phrase is for, you know, projects for groups in your business or what have you, this is a good option to consider as well. And so I'm just putting that out there from a business point of view that he is available for discussion and how this could benefit your team, air quotes, you know, to build morale or to, you know, increase productivity, whatever it is that you might be trying to accomplish. So I wanted to put that out there as well. It's not just individual, you know, he's available for group projects as well. So if you have any questions, reach out to him.
And there are several ways to do that. And, of course, Facebook and the Greenhouse Effect page and I think there's even a page on Write Your Own Book Club. I don't think we have a page on meditation yet, but that's coming. And there is also a workshop, a breath workshop, scheduled an all-day event. I think it's on the 27th of July. But there'll be more about that as that time grows closer. So, Will, thank you, man, for that plug. I always appreciate it. I love you, son. And Will has done breath work, y'all. And he's more knowledgeable than he lets on. And, you know, Will is very skilled in the music. And often we compare music and compare, you know, where music is felt or if it works with this meditative design. So, and always a good source to contact Will Green is. So, Will, thank you again, man, for handling, you know, the other half of the show, man. Appreciate, as always, you know, your support. Love you, man.
Love you, too.
And to the rest of you, I trust that you have a good night. And I'll be in Austin next week, and I'll be broadcasting from Austin next Wednesday. So thank you all for tuning in. God bless you, and have a good night. We'll talk to you, man.
All right. Have a good night.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure. We will be sure. Oh, glory.
Glory. Glory.
Oh.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walked through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots be on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh,
glory.
Oh,
glory, glory.
Now the war is not over. Victory isn't won. But we'll fight on to the finish. And then when it's all done, we'll cry glory. Oh, glory. Oh,
Selma is now. For every man, woman, and child. Even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch, we gon' run with it now. Never look back, we done gone hundreds of miles. From dark roads, heroes, to become a hero. Facing the League of Justice, his power was the people. Enemy is lethal, a king became regal. Saw the face of Jim Crow under a bald ego. No one can win a war individually. It takes the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call victory, the coming of the Lord. My eyes have seen the glory.
One day,